Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Peter. Thank you, Larissa. And we may disagree with some of the metaphysics of that song, especially the if business. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the buoyancy and the joy is so important, you know. If you're going to have a prosperity consciousness, if you're going to attract the good into your life, then it's important to stay positive, to stay buoyant around these things. And I think the shift that Butterworth talks about, that Thane shared with us, from problem to project is very apropos here, you know. That's why I like to call it an adventure rather than a difficulty, because it's the same kind of shift. You're shifting from something that attracts a lot of negative energy to it, a lot of baggage, to something that seems to be joyous and possible. And that's the whole idea about spiritualizing money. You may have guessed we are talking about money today. Did you pick up on that one at all? You got the email too, and this is a whole theme we're working with today, and we're going to talk more about it, of course, at the potluck today as well. You know, nothing elicits so much extremism as money does. You know, we love it, we crave it, we fear it, we'll kill for it, we'll behead people for it. Humankind does all kinds of strange things when it comes to money. You can't be neutral about it. It comes with a lot of baggage. Sometimes we feel there's not enough of it, right? We're filled with lack consciousness. And so it's got a charge to it. It's got an energy to it that we have to deal with in some way. And then when you add the church to it, when you add spiritual life to money, then it becomes really weird, you know, because you've got this one extreme that went on for thousands of years, the idea that it's almost a sin to be rich, you know. The holy poverty idea, poverty, chastity, and obedience. That's such a fun way of living, isn't it? Got to be poor, got to be chaste, and you got to be obedient. Ooh, I don't know about that. That's why I'm in Unity. I don't have to be poor, chaste, and obedient anymore. Thank God. But it can't be right if that's an extreme, you know, where we have to say life is miserable, it's full of lack, and in fact it's more holy to not have stuff and everything. But then you go to the other extreme, and we've got this sort of prosperity, overly prosperity consciousness, and concerns about the nature of money and wealth of the church. You think about things like the Vatican Bank, you know, which is a hugely massive institution, and it's very shady. We don't know exactly what goes on in those hallowed halls. But also I'm thinking televangelists and this sort of joy and ostentation, you know, the gold watches, the big cars, almost a greedy approach. So you got lack on the one side and greed on the other, and there's got to be a balance. Yes, there has to be a balance if we're looking at money in a healthy way. Not to be afraid of it, not to deny it. It's part of the flow, but not to get overly enamored of it either and make it a fetish out of it. Jesus is a good case in point, you know, because Jesus talked much about ordinary everyday life, money, the problems of work, of families, as he did about the great philosophical ideas of love. He talked about where people were, where we all are on any given day, and he was obviously very well provided for. It says in the Gospels that women came and ministered to him of their means, of their money. They provided for him. So he was undergirded by provision to enable his ministry to go forward. He didn't necessarily deal directly with money, but he did have an accounting department. You know, Judas took care of the money, and so it all flowed quite nicely. But I think he's a good case in point. He was in the world, as we say, but not of it. He used it. It was a part of the flow, but he wasn't a slave to it. And I think that's part of the balance here. You know, it's often said, it's a misnomer, but it's often said that money is the root of all evil. Wrong. Not true. So what is it then? What does the Bible actually say? The love of money, right? That's the key here. It's where is our energy and effort and love going? If we're loving money and forget that it is just simply a symbol of something else, a symbol of prosperity, if we're falling in love with the thing itself, then yes, it does lead to all kinds of evil, as we said before, you know, and people wanted to behead others. I just read an article, saw a show about the cartels on the border and all the egregious behavior that's done, you know, and no mercy, no higher virtues involved. It's all about money. It's all about greed and the things that human beings will do as a result of that. And I have to ask myself, you know, those are brothers and sisters of me. So where is this coming from in my own consciousness, this idea of this hatefulness and this willingness to do anything, however egregious? There has to be a higher way. And like I say, whichever way you slice it, money is a charged subject, to quote a phrase, excuse the pun. People didn't laugh at 9:30, and they're obviously not going to do it today at 11, so I don't know why I was milking that one so sad. I was barking up the wrong tree. Never mind. It's okay to groan. Feel free to groan. Oh, I probably said it in my British accent. I should have said charged. It's a charged subject. I said charged. Moving right along, as they say. See what Charles Fillmore says, co-founder of Unity, about prosperity and about money. Because prosperity is the goal here, not just money. You know, money flows to where our consciousness is. It is just a vehicle. It is not the thing itself. Prosperity is what we're talking about. And prosperity is very little to do with money. It has more to do with allowing God's abundant flow to be in our lives, right? And that can happen in relationships. It can happen in creativity. It can happen in all kinds of ways, cooking a good meal. These are all examples of prosperity. It's not just about money. And if we leave it to just about money, we miss the whole point. But we want it in money too. We want to have that same prosperous awareness in money as we have in other areas of our lives. So Fillmore starts off with a truism, very down to earth. He says it's a medium of exchange and a measurement of value. Okay. But then he starts to get spiritual about it. He says the money is the materialization of spiritual substance, the symbol of the idea of prosperity. The money idea is good and draws to us good when we are functioning in divine order. Love of money is the root of much evil. Man should love the source of all money, God. So he's saying there's a divine connection between God and money. It's a channel by which God's good can flow. Yeah. Listen to this again. The materialization of spiritual substance. Spiritual substance is that energy that fills the universe, right? It is God's matrix, God's ether of possibility, the divine energy. Modern scientists are telling us that this fills the universe, right? And now they're talking about a vast unknown energy called dark matter and dark energy, which fills more than 70% of the universe, and we know nothing about it, see? But I would suggest when we do start to find out about it, we will realize it is the glue, it's the cosmic glue that holds everything together, and it's palpable, it's real, and we can harness it. It's like electricity, if you like. Before we discovered electricity, we had no concept of what it could be used for. Now we use electricity in a multiplicity of ways to provide for our modern lives, right? We drew it out of the ethers, if you like. We discovered it, but it was already there. So is spiritual substance already there. And when we draw it into actuality, then we achieve and we exhibit prosperity in our lives. He says the money idea is good and draws to us good. And here's the condition: when we are functioning in divine order, right? Well, what is the divine order of events? We often get it round the wrong way. If we are in the right priority, then it's going to flow. So what comes first? God first, yeah? And then my gratitude and my awareness of that good, of God's good, and then my willingness to exhibit it, to express it. Right? We'll come into this in more detail later, but I think the key idea here is, where's your priority? You know, if we're in lack, where is our focus? It's not on God. Where's the focus when you're feeling lack? That what's missing? There's not enough to go around. I'm in a finite universe, right? They have it. Somebody else has the power. All these things destroy our ability to flow with the good, because we bought into a priority that's lacking, that's to do with limitation, rather than the priority which is God, which is limitless substance. So Phil was saying, you got to change that tape. You got to change that attitude if you're going to see prosperity flow in your life. The metaphysicians went as far as to say that money is God in action. And I don't think that's the only way God is in action, but it can be a way that God acts through money. In other words, money's neutral, and therefore, yes, it is simply a means by which God's energy can flow into our lives. Talk about extremes. Here's another extreme. So if we're like Tevi and we're singing about, if I were a rich man, it's like almost an unattainable goal, isn't it? It's like it's never going to happen, but it sounds fun, right? And if ever my ship came in, that's what I'm going to have. I'm going to show off, and it's going to be wonderful. You know, that's an extreme, and we've all been to that part of consciousness sometimes, I think. I want it, but I know I can never get it. I can never have it. Remember my dad? Grew up working class in the 40s and 50s in Britain. He was a manual laborer most of his life. And he always had this dream of having a small holding, as he called it, just 2 or 3 acres out in the country where he could grow food and have chickens, and then it would be a dream for him. That would be his ultimate. And he would always bring this up, one day I'm going to have my small holding, you know. Well, he never did. He died young, and it was always a pipe dream. It was an unattainable goal for him. And I remember that was a huge shifting point in my life, that I would never buy into the idea of having a small holding sometime later. You know, have the good sometime later. It has to be now. Even if it's not 2 acres, even if it's just a square plot of land where you can grow some crops, if you do that well, then more will be added. That's my understanding, right? Like Jesus says, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in this little thing. Now I will give you more. Why it breaks down is because we can't be happy with the little. We want the big. You know, well, they've got it. Why can't I have it? You know, so we can't spend the time and give thanks where we are, because we're always comparing ourselves to others. It's a fatal idea, I think. We have to shift that consciousness. Remember, I was in India for 6 months and my money had run out. This is when I'm in my 20s. And I was sitting there with no money and thinking, well, what's going to happen next? I'm in a foreign country. I'm a young man. I got nowhere to go. I don't have any money. I felt gloriously free. I felt gloriously free. I didn't know what was going to happen, but it didn't matter. I trusted that it was going to work out, and it did. There were means by which other monies came, and I was able to continue my journey and eventually come back to Britain. And I thought, that's interesting. No money, no visible means of support, and yet I knew deep in my heart that God provides, that there was that energy that is around. And it was, I think, the beginning of my ability to see spiritually the idea of money, the idea of flow. It's not dependent on what appears to be in the outer. It is very much dependent on where your mind is internally, yeah? If we dwell in lack, if I'd started having the screaming heebie-jeebies about, oh my God, what am I going to do? All it would have done was load me with worry and anxiety, and my good probably wouldn't have flowed, because I would have blocked it, yeah? But instead, there was that willingness. I've shared many times before, let me bore you again. I came to the States with 3 trunks and 7 suitcases 30 years ago. Now you wouldn't believe the amount of junk I've got, you know. Not junk, stuff. Point being, though, You start with very little and the stuff accumulates. Well, how did it accumulate? It didn't accumulate because I had any money, because I didn't. And Larissa will share the same thing. She did at 9:30. You know, when she came over with Eugene, what? Nothing, basically. No, you couldn't even bring money out of the country. And yet we come to this great land of opportunity, yes? And with the idea of knowing that God provides and your willingness to do the work that's necessary to harness that, then miracles come forth in our lives. It's not the stuff. It's not the evidence physically. It's the knowing in consciousness. I think that's what Charles Fillmore is talking about. The other extreme, by the way, we didn't get to the other extreme. One extreme is it's unattainable. The other side of it is it's given too easily. You know, if you inherit and get money too easily, what happens? You don't know its true value, and you squander it often. So again, it's the balance, isn't it? You have to work for it. There has to be that idea that I am harnessing the good in my life. Not that it's given to me, not only entitled to it, but I'm willing to do the work that's necessary. One of my favorite authors, and Thane talked about it too, is Eric Butterworth, and I love his books. One of his books is Discover the Power Within You. It's the spiritual life of Jesus, and from a metaphysical point of view. And he came out with this one in 1993. It's called Spiritual Economics: The Principles and Process of True Prosperity. It's full of good advice, just like the one she read, you know, shifting it from a problem to a project. It cuts out all that negative baggage, so we're able to be more creative. Anyway, there's three key ideas here in this book that I'm going to distill it down to three ideas. I think that's the essence of what we're talking about here. First of all, God is our source, right? God is the source of all good, and the source is God's substance. It's not physical substance, it's that invisible energy we talked about. Where is it? Everywhere, right? It imbues everything. It's like love. It's a form of love. It's a form of givingness. God gave. God so loved the world that he gave. Doesn't matter what he gives. Because he gives everything. You know, we usually go on and say what he gave Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah, he did give Lord Jesus Christ, but he gave everything else too. He gave everything and still continues to give. So we can trust God as our source. I'm not going to get into the special source. Do you want me to go into the special source? No, okay. I say source and it sounds like sauce, you know. I've got to learn to say source. It's another of those British things again. This isn't special sauce that you put on your hot sauce. It's not hot sauce, though it is pretty cool. Yeah, like I said, moving right along. Key idea here, invisible energy is all around us. It's ours to claim. But there's the second point. It's very important. Because sometimes we say, oh, well, I trust God. God's going to provide. Yes, but we have to. This is the problem with if I were a bitch man. The ifs are going to put it off till never, right? It can't be if. It's since, now. I claim my good. So that's the second principle, isn't it? I have to claim my good. Here's the question then. How? How do you do that? If you know, if you're accepting that the universe is filled with divine energy and possibility, how are you going to harness that? You have to what? Okay, so there's that faith-filled attitude. You know this is true. You don't. It's not a nice idea. You know it. You're going to trust that. Okay. Follow the signs. Follow the guidance. Yes. Follow the intention. Have an intention to follow the highest and best, the divine order. Yeah. Put into practice the little bit that you know, right? Because then more will be given. Claim it. Claim that good. Yes, it's mine. I'm not living in lack anymore. I'm claiming abundant good. Act as if, okay? Do what you can with what you have right now. Yeah, don't wait till something else comes along. Because nothing will be done. I've noticed that in my life, you know. I don't achieve anything unless I'm willing to do that which is mine to do on that particular day. And if I do that well and faithfully, then greater good flows. So it's my intention. What you can conceive, too, because what you could conceive, as the old truism says, you can achieve. If you can conceive it to be possible. I mean, all the great inventions of history came about because somebody had a conception of something and was willing to do the work, the energy, the sweat, to bring it into actuality, yeah? That's the only difference between a genius and us. We all get great ideas, we just don't always act on them. But these folks acted on them and did all the necessary work to bring them into actuality in their lives. So, important that God is the source, but then I have to be willing to embody that too, to make that real in my life. That's two. And the third one is the key here that finishes up the Trinity. And Cheryl's already alluded to it. It's the consciousness of how we approach this with giving, with generosity. See, because God is generous, yeah? So therefore, as beings of God, of children of God, what? We need to be generous also. Not just with money, but generous in the way we approach life. Generous with a smile. Generous with our presence. Generous with our time. Generous with encouraging words for others. Oh, awesome. See, it's the giving attitude. Because when you give from that consciousness, what happens? You're going to get more. You know, you've created a vacuum in your head, in your consciousness, and nature abhors a vacuum. It's going to fill it. So often what we do, if we give begrudgingly, we've already filled our vacuum with fear and resentment, and so God can't give. And then we say, well, I gave and nothing happened. Well, you gave maybe because, with a begrudging, fear-filled attitude, and so it stopped the flow. We have to give expansively, freely, don't we? With joy, with energy. There's a quote from Emily Cady, who is the first author in Unity. She wrote Lessons in Truth. She's quoted in Spiritual Economics. She says, one of the unerring truths of the universe is that there is already provided a lavish abundance for every human want. Let me read that again. So powerful. One of the unerring truths of the universe is that there is already provided a lavish abundance for every human want. It's already been provided. Just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not there, right? It's already provided. Another truth. Wait a minute, before that, she says, in other words, the supply of every good always awaits the demand. Another truth is that the demand must be made before the supply can come forth to fill it. The demand must be made. So this is where we come in. We must request, claim, ask for the good before it will be made manifest for us, right? We stymie ourselves because we say, oh, well, I don't want to bother anybody about it. I don't know if I deserve it, whatever. No, you can claim your good in a very balanced way. I'm thinking about my daughter, and I shared this at 9:30. I'll share it again because I was talking with a young lady whose journey is hopefully to go to nursing school, and I was sharing my story of my daughter. My daughter flunked out of UT in 2000 because it was just at the time, or just after 2000, just after the time my late wife passed, her mother. And so it was a bad time for all of us, but it was a bad time for her because she wanted to get through college. And so she had to start again at Grey Pond Average at Bond. And she started again at TCC, yeah? And she got the basic courses, started to build a grade point average. Then she transferred to UTA. And then finally she transferred to TCU and went to the Harris School of Nursing and then graduated and is now an emergency room nurse in Dallas. Well, the point being of that story is, and I was proud of her for doing this, she didn't immediately say, well, I've got to go to the best place immediately. No, she was willing to embody it at the level that was reasonable at the time and then set forth the intention, I can do better, I can arise and go to the school I really dreamed to go to. This is so powerful and important, I think, isn't it? It's the willingness to embody the principles of prosperity that we've just been talking about. So, let's finish up. Pop quiz. What the heck have we learned today? The world is abundant. God is abundance. Live generously. Money is not bad. It's neutral. These are all good points. A project, an adventure, yes. Claim your good. And be willing to do that which is yours to do this week, right? However small it might appear to be. Because if you get that right and you do that well, then there's the reward and more good will flow from that. Yeah? Anything else we missed? The physical world reflects your spiritual world. So if you're aligned in that priority we talked about earlier, then it's going to be made manifest. So always acknowledge God as the source, right? Jesus did it. He said, the Father within me is the one that does the works. I give glory to the presence of Spirit within me, knowing that God will bring forth everything in a right and perfect way. Let me finish with a quote from Victor Hugo, the great French writer. Again, this is quoted in Spiritual Economics. He says, be like the bird that pausing in her flight while on boughs too slight feels them give way beneath her and yet sings knowing she hath wings. Be like the bird that pausing in her flight while on boughs too slight feels them give way beneath her and yet sings knowing she hath wings. This is us, folks. Sometimes we're on those delicate boughs, and we seem like we're, I'm going down. But then we remember, no, I'm not just a physical being. I am a spiritual being. I have wings to fly. And that gives me victory and gives us all victory today and every day. So it is. So in order to let the spiritual inform the physical, the material, we have to return on a regular basis to the spiritual. Not get caught up in the effects, but move to cause, move to source. And the most effective way to do that is in meditation, is to be still, to return to the silent place within us where all things exist. Where all divine qualities are, where the abundance and the good and the unconditional love of God dwell. And so we are wise on a daily basis to take time to come apart and rest. We do that now. Move into the stillness, and where two or more gathered, there is the Christ presence. And so the ability to do the work is vastly improved when we come together as a community. Gathered to remember. To let prosperity and abundance flow for ourselves, but also for all beings. So as we move into the silence, simply enjoy that place. Know the truth of who you are and what's possible. in the silence.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.